Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered. But we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Beyond a Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on the church. Get it on mandate. Get it on. Welcome to the best 15 minutes or so in the universe. It's Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. It's Mark Garagus over there. Mark, I think we have a lot of cop stories to talk about today. I know the first story is one we've talked about in the past, although it's been a while, but a verdict has been rendered.
Out of Arkansas, yeah, the case where the gentleman was holding a gun to his own head and was ordered to drop it, and when he moved his hand, the cops fired.
Teenage, the most horrible part of all was that it was his poor mother who called the police looking for help, and they ended up executing him. For viewers who have listened, they'll remember that it was dismissed at the trial stage, the district court. We took it to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, got a unanimous published opinion reversing it. Went back down to the trial court. We were set for trial for next month. And yesterday, the judge again dismissed the case. And Gary, I think you've got the quote that I excerpted, which is mind-boggling to me. But
so the kid was 16, 17, something like that?
Correct.
Took the left the house with the gun, said maybe he was going to take his own life in the woods, I believe.
Under the influence.
Under the influence. Cop showed up. He had his gun to the head, the young man did, and then the cop said, drop the gun, and he dropped his arm, I guess, to drop the gun,
just,
and the cop
just
shot
started.
Him.
Yeah,
the quote that Mark was referencing is, quote, "The use of deadly force was reasonable, even if Keegan had no intention of firing upon the officers and only inadvertently pointed the muzzle at them while attempting to comply with the order to drop the gun," end quote.
Which, by the way, the evidence is disputed on whether the gun was there, even based on the officer's sworn testimony. Whether the gun was pointed, you know, they said right. Inadvertently, that wasn't what the officer testified to. That should have been left to a trier of fact. And using deadly force in that situation, I just think is mind-boggling to me. This points out exactly the problem with qualified immunity. This idea, and qualified immunity is a judicially created doctrine that basically insulates officers and officials in their official acts. And this points out the problem of it. I mean, added fact, this officer, this is not the first time he's killed either, and it's not the first force he's been on. It's wild to me that now we're going to have to go back up to the Eighth Circuit again and take it up on appeal.
Well, it seems to me that if one is holding a gun to one's head and the officer says, drop the gun, there would almost have to be a motion that the cop could argue, well, as the gun was coming down, it faced out, or I felt like I was in jeopardy just about anywhere, anytime, which is always the argument. It seems to me that the cop should have said, open your hand and drop the gun, or slide your hand down the barrel and drop the gun. Like, if you're just saying drop the gun, then there's someone in front of you with a gun and their arm is moving, and that's going to happen. So it seems like his instructions were a little, I mean, could have been more specific, but this is one of those things where you also have to weigh in a bunch of other stuff. Like, you're not dealing with a gangbanger. You're not dealing with someone who just shot your partner. You're dealing with a despondent youth. you know.
He's a teenager who was felt he was going to get expelled because he had, if you believe the authorities, that he had nodded off in school. And so they have a zero tolerance policy because he had nodded off and he was despondent. And the mother was going to take him to get help and stop to get her driver's license at the house. And he was despondent. I mean, it's just it's a parent's worst nightmare.
There is no body cam anything, right?
Well, there's nothing that shows the moment of it, correct?
And there's no other witnesses. The mom wasn't there.
The mom was in the vicinity. The officers who were there, obviously the other officers didn't shoot, just this one officer. And that's probably the most disconcerting thing. There was no immediate threat. He was in the woods. It wasn't like he was brandishing it at anyone else or anybody else. In fact, the only thing he did is comply with the order. And he complied with the order and was killed.
What was the other officer involved shooting that this officer was involved in?
I believe one with a dog and also another shooting with another department. And he's yet been hired at a third department. So it's hard to believe that in this day and age that, and I guess, you know, part of the frustration is also, who else is going to take these cases when they just get, when every time you get on the eve of trial, you get dismissed and then you've got to go and do all the briefing and go to the circuit court and go up there and argue and wait for a decision. And you get a reversal and you come back down to the trial court. Once again, the trial court dismisses it. Somebody had tweeted, I think, that it's almost like the legal version of a circle jerk. And it's a wonder. It's why most lawyers won't touch these cases.
Well, one of the things I'm constantly kind of ruminating on is optics. So, you know, I complain all the time that the media claims to care about bad cop shootings, but it always depends on the race of the cop, the race of the assailant, the race of everyone. I believe that in a case like this, if this had enough media coverage and enough people would be outraged by it, I gotta believe that the judge would be thinking twice about dropping it. Do you think there's a factor of nobody cares about this kid, nobody's heard of the story? White cop shooting white kid, we're moving on. I can do this with impunity, meaning the judge. The judge is not going to have to wake up the next day and see an angry mob outside his house.
Well, I think most judges would tell you that they never make a decision based upon the media or things of that nature. And I would beg to differ. I think that that there's an old expression that even the U.S. Supreme Court reads election returns. And that's kind of a way of saying that judges do tend to understand what the environment is that they're living in. And so I'm still reeling from this for the sake of the family, and it's just so frustrating. I don't even know where to begin.
So what's the next step for you?
File a notice of appeal, go back up to the Eighth Circuit again. Especially because, you know, when you're on the eve of trial, I mean, we had 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it was until trial. We had a trial date. And and that's, you know, then out of nowhere, boom.
Well, we were speaking of cops and shootings, the Ashley Babbitt case was something we were kind of discussing on the eve of, or not the eve, but sort of the morning of the afternoon with Lester Holt. Officer Byrd, I think is his name, was talking with Lester Holt. And again, it's all kind of the media's spin. He shot an unarmed woman. We're not interested. From a media standpoint, because it doesn't fit the narrative, especially since the cop is black and she's white and she's a Trump voter, and we're not interested. But in his testimony, or not in his testimony, but in his interview with Lester Holt, now he's been acquitted or found not cleared. Guilty or cleared by the Capitol Police Commission or whatever it is. In it, he gave this testimony, and I'm curious what you think of this. I'll play an 18-second clip.
Sure.
You know, it was later I, you know, found out that the subject did not have a weapon, but there was no way to know that at that time. And I could not fully see her hands or what was in the backpack or what the intentions of. But they had shown violence leading up to that point.
So he's saying, I couldn't see her hands. I don't know if she had a weapon. I don't know what her intent was. But isn't that part of protocol for not shooting people? I didn't know it was the absence of a weapon. It's you need to see a weapon and shoot someone, not know if they have a weapon and then shoot them. There's the ones where you think it's a weapon and it's a burrito,
a cell phone,
or something like that. But this is, I saw nothing. I didn't know what her intentions were. So I shot her. That feels a little incriminating or self-incriminating to me, but
yeah, we discussed before this was played, and you had a theory that somebody, Fox News or somebody was going to do an expose and then we got a lot of comments. I noticed that people had said, well, no, the name was out there. I kind of stick to what I surmised before I watched it. I do not understand what the how this is helpful to somebody who has been, apparently from what we understand, this was a Inspector General investigation, which is kind of like an internal affairs. That isn't necessarily a prosecutorial agency. And then there's issues on who would have jurisdiction over something that takes place on those grounds. And you would presume that since many of those people are being prosecuted by the U.S. Attorney's Office who were trying to break in or forcibly breaking in, that they would have the jurisdiction there. And I don't know if there has been a declination by the U.S. Attorney's Office. I haven't heard of it. Have you or Gary, have you seen it anywhere?
I have not. So now in terms of a civil suit, cops aren't rich. They don't have a big net worth. They don't have deep pockets. The guy probably makes $74,000 a year. Now there's a civil suit. Who is on the hook for the civil suit? Because obviously they're not going to sue him. They're going to sue the Capitol Police, right?
Well, they would sue him. They would sue the Capitol Police. They would sue arguably anybody going up in the chain of command in the Capitol Police could be on the hook if they're going to make an argument that there was insufficient training and things of that nature. That would also get you into the theory of holding the Capitol Police liable as well. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not there is qualified immunity granted in a civil suit as well, because it's the same principle that reasonable force was used. And we'll see if a judge makes that determination there as well.
Well, he said somewhere else in an interview that he was falling back on his training, or he was essentially following his training. But that would suggest you're trained to shoot somebody. And the other argument, you tell me if this is a good argument. I've heard a few of these things. If you shot her, then why not shoot the five people next to her if this is what you believe? And or there were many Capitol Police officers that day who were doing battle with rioters, and they all had guns on them, but nobody shot anybody. Why was this so specific?
Well, that's generally the argument that I'm making in situations where just one officer is firing. If just one officer is firing and that's the only person who believes that they need to use reasonable force, and especially in situations where there are other officers who are in close proximity, why is it that they did not perceive that? And how is it? And isn't that a jury decision in terms of that factual determination as to whether or not the person was using reasonable force?
Well, in that particular case, Gary, I don't know if you can find it anywhere, but I think there were a bunch of uniform sort of riot guys behind her. Like, there was, he wasn't, which would hurt his argument. I don't know if he saw them from where he was.
He claims he couldn't see those officers and was not in communication with them, and that they were not making their presence known via the radio. Mm-hmm. I saw him speak about that. You know, it's, I watched the whole interview, and you're right. He does lean heavily on his training. That's a lot of the questions. He goes back to his training and reiterates that he followed his training. So that's definitely something he leaned on.
So, again, I guess having that interview, I feel like it's undue peril. I just feel like Mark Ercos would have told his client, do not get up there and talk to Lester Holt about not being able to see her hands. That just feels like that could get used against you at some point in a civil case.
Right. And I just don't understand it either, civil or criminal jeopardy. It seems to me to be a incomprehensible move, except if you're trying to do some kind of damage control. I know that he said, Gary, earlier in that interview, didn't he mention a couple of times that he's been under or has had death threats and things of that nature?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to me, it doesn't seem to, you know, I know, and I'm sure in his mind, he believes it's a courageous thing to out himself, but you know, I assume he's got a family that he's worried about, and I just don't. I would have exercised a lot more caution.
All right, Mark, we'll let you run off to your next case or possibly a sushi dinner. I will wrap it up by saying,
thank you very much, fellas.
Talking about BetterHelp, this podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? Well, we all have that, don't we? Let's see if we can straighten that out. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with a licensed professional therapist. Start communicating in under 48 hours. Easy and free to change counselors if needed. Not a crisis line or self-help. It's professional counseling done securely. It's done online. Log in anytime, send a message to your counselor. You'll get a timely, thoughtful response. Plus, schedule weekly video or phone sessions. No uncomfortable waiting room visits. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Right, Gary?
That's right. Visit BetterHelp.com/reasonable doubt. That's Better H-E-L-P. And join the over 2 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional therapists in all 50 states. Special offer for Reasonable Doubt listeners. Get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/reasonable doubt.
All right. You can see me at the Solana Beach at the Belly Up. That's coming up on the 22nd of September. And then Royal Oak before that, 10th of September. That's in Michigan. And then the 11th, Kansas City. Arvest Bank Theater. Go to mcarroll.com because there's live shows coming around everywhere. And until next time, Sam Carroll for Mark Garagos saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. Stay tuned for more bonus episodes coming soon.